everybody. It's Dallin Levy, and you're joining me on this Sunday evening. It's my show here on Blog Talk Radio, the Dallin Levy Show. We'll be starting in about a minute right now, and we're going to have a couple of very interesting guests tonight, Cinnamon Stillwell and Cynthia Bryan, and they'll be joining me in a few moments, talk about a bunch of things. Should be fun. So enjoy the time. I hope to take some of your calls. Remember, during my show, you can reach me at 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. And should be a fun evening. Looking forward to it. Both very interesting guests who I've come in contact with through, one of them came through Atlas, with Cinnamon, and Cynthia Bryan has her own radio show and involves a bunch of things. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dallin Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio, and yes, this is Dallin Levy coming to you, broadcasting to you live in color. Well, not really, can't see me, but I'm live anyway in northern New Jersey, and very excited about the show this evening. We have two guests. I have two guests tonight. The first guest we'll have tonight is Cinnamon Stillwell. She's a political, she has a column on San Francisco Chronicle online version, and she writes a blog called cinnamonstillwell.blogspot.com, and she'll be my first guest tonight, and we're going to have a lot to talk to her about. And then we have Ms. Cynthia Bryan. Cynthia has a few blogs. I was doing some background checks on Cynthia, and she's quite fascinating, and we're going to learn a lot more about her. I've pulled out some information on her. She has a website called BeTheStarYouAre.org. And so Cynthia Bryan will be joining us later on Blog Talk Radio. If you would like to call any of my guests this evening or call me with a question tonight, feel free to do so. That number is 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. And I also can receive IM messages from you if you like. I'm on Blog Talk Radio. It's the name, screen name, using Skype. So that's Blog Talk Radio, screen name, and that's using Skype. So where should we go? Well, a lot of very exciting things are happening here at Blog Talk Radio. We're really just so pleased with how things are moving along. As many of you know, we started the website approximately August 1st, and I just was checking out the site over the weekend, and we have more than 500 hosts who have signed up to be hosts on Blog Talk Radio. We have hosts originating from more than 25 countries, selecting more than 40 genres, and the feedback we've gotten has really been terrific. And I'm trying to understand kind of where we fit into this new medium, because I think we're defining a new medium. I think that's a very important thing. So first, when we launched Blog Talk Radio, of course, we have the word radio in our name. So obviously, it's quite important for us. And I think we focused on the platform of talk radio. What we know about talk radio and historically is that talk radio, it's really limited to certain geographic regions. Terrestrial talk radio, for example, in New York, is really 770 or ABC, and you have 710 WOR, and there's a few noted personalities, Rush Limbaugh, you've got Bill O'Reilly, you know, and Al Franken. Actually, he's on Air America, which I heard has gone bankrupt, so that's quite interesting, or not doing well anyway. So I think that terrestrial radio is something that's obviously been widely universal. It's very easy. It's in the car. It's accessible. The content has been good. But I think that Blog Talk Radio provides a very interesting format. It gives people, anybody, the ability to engage an audience. And I've posed this question to many, and I said, well, how many people are out there? How many other Rush Limbaughs do you think are out there? Or Howard Sterns? Or Mike and the Mad Dog, if you know New York sports, which I do in this area here? And I think the answer is many. And we're seeing a lot of talented people coming onto Blog Talk Radio. We've had hosts on Blog Talk Radio, some of our top ones now, like Awesome Zara, who was a guest on my show last week, who's one of the top bloggers on MySpace. And she loves the platform because she has the opportunity to speak to her audience live. She hears what they have to say. They call in. They're part of the show. And you don't get that from MySpace. In fact, you don't get that from any platform or any 2.0 application or platform out there. YouTube, MySpace, they're done in a historical sense. And Blog Talk Radio is live. We are live now. We're broadcasting live. So whether you're in New York, you're in London, Tokyo, you can hear Blog Talk Radio. And I think that's what's quite appealing. And the other thing that's appealing, of course, is that you're able to use to record your shows or to host your shows using phones. Well, not just the host, of course, but the callers or the guests. They don't have to be in the same city anymore, which you would do in traditional radio. I have two guests tonight. One guest, I believe, is in San Francisco. That's Cinnamon. The other guest is in San Diego, Cynthia. I don't know, even know where she is this evening. I believe she's based out of San Diego. She's in California. But that's the beauty of this platform. So we're very excited by it. The feedback we've gotten from the host has been terrific. The feedback we've gotten from listeners has been very good. So we'll carry on in that conversation. I have Cinnamon on the I believe we have Cinnamon on the phone. Let's take her on, and we'll chat and see how she's doing. Cinnamon, hi, you there?
Hi, Alan, here I am.
Great, how are you?
I'm doing great, how are you?
Terrific, terrific. I was just giving a little my twice-a-week rendition of why Blog Talk Radio is an interesting platform.
Oh, yeah. Well, you definitely convinced me the last time we talked.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
Uh-huh.
You know, first of all, all my listeners, I'd like to welcome Cinnamon Stillwell. She's a guest on my show tonight. You could find her blog at cinnamonstillwell.blogspot.com. And she's quite interesting. We spoke a bit, and you came in, you got to know Blog Talk Radio through Atlas. Is that right?
That's right, through Pamela, or
yes.
Atlas, otherwise known as. That's right, because I've been listening to her show and her interviews, and I'm just finding, and then, you know, started listening around a little, and there's just the time, and without the interruption of commercials and everything, to have some really in-depth, thoughtful interviews that I don't hear on regular radio, to be honest, or old radio, as you called it.
Right, traditional, or terrestrial. I don't know what the right word is. I think that's right.
Well, I think old radio kind of, I thought that was amusing because it reminded me of old media, a term that I often use.
I spoke to somebody the other day, and he said, you should wake up with this thought in the morning or go to sleep thinking of this. What blogging did to newspapers, Blog Talk Radio will do to radio.
That's right. Well, I hope so, you know. I mean, and it's really taken off, I guess. It's just been couple months or a little
it's
over
been a
that?
Couple of months, and it's spreading around, and I think what people find it really just fascinating, a lot of people spend hours and hours, and I know you write a blog and you reach out to a certain audience, but this gives you the ability to engage that audience and get feedback and speak directly with them. And some of the more popular bloggers have been doing it for years, have people who make comments regularly on their site but have never spoken to them. They've never heard their voice.
Right.
So it's quite interesting. So you know what? We'll kind of see where this evolves. And hopefully you'll be doing a show on Blog Talk Radio. We'll look forward to that.
Well, I'm thinking about it.
Okay. Well, you'll do great. You'll do great. So before we get going, I had a show on – there was a show – did you listen to the show just before this show?
You know, I'm afraid I didn't. I
okay.
was actually out.
There was a show called The Anti-Communist Show.
Uh-huh.
And it was hosted by a gentleman by Edwin Nash. I think it was his first show, and I had never heard of the show before. He is a paleoconservative.
Okay.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I know what that is, sort of in the Pat Buchanan family.
Yes, exactly. Buchanan, and he was, white, Christian ideals, kind of, right, very far right, I would say.
Okay.
But it was quite interesting. We were listening to this. I was listening to the show, and he had the opportunity just to express himself like anybody. You know, it's an open platform. So he was on, and quite radical views, because it's interesting how the Republican Party is kind of, I think, a little confused now. But I know you're a Republican, but not forever. I mean, it's been about 5 years, right, since you became a neocon. Was that right?
Well, you know, it's so funny. It's so difficult to affix labels to myself and those sort of in my little political sphere. And in some ways, none of the labels really fit accurately.
We don't like labels anyway, so let's forget
Yeah,
them.
Exactly. I sort of call us affectionately the political misfits. And these are people, you know, like myself who had, you know, well, there's quite a big tradition of this, but people going from left to right. In my case, it was after 9/11. And, you know, I've become sort of fascinated with that phenomenon, and I started a group for people like myself, an online discussion group at Yahoo, and then local members. We meet once a month, and we have a lot of fun. And it's called the 9/11 Neocons, and there's a similar group actually based in New York that Pamela, or Atlas, is a member of. She's a member of my group, too. That's actually how I kind of got to know her. But the group in New York is called the Liberal Hawks. And you can see with these, you know, attempts to put labels on ourselves, it covers a lot of territory. And my group here in the Bay Area is not started out just for sort of ex-lefties after 9/11, and then it had to get a lot bigger than that because there are a lot of people just here in the Bay Area who are kind of a little socially isolated, having politics that are right of center.
You're not focused really on social issues in terms of right or left. It's more related to issues surrounding terror.
Well, and, you know, not exactly. I started out that way. And it's funny, with the term neocon, I was just discussing this the other day with a friend. I mean, I started out as a Republican. I'm now an independent, but I definitely lean Republican. I started out, you know, after my initial switch as that, and very much a believer in the neoconservative school of foreign policy. And I still am, although, you know, I think it may be a little more optimistic. I may have become a tad more cynical in the last 5 years. But when I use the term neocon for the group I started, I was thinking more of the literal term, neo as in new, conservative, con, you know. And I think that that's a little bit more accurate. And I am actually pretty conservative on a lot of social issues as well. I mean, I've just been exploring as I go along. And a lot of aspects of political philosophy, you know, sort of on the moderate to right side of the spectrum, just make sense to me. And, you know, I often say about my little transformation or my political transformation is that it wasn't so much a switching of politics as, in my case, engaging with reality for maybe the first time to some extent. And forced me to rethink some things, you know, and how I would approach different kinds of social problems and challenges.
Right.
That's really all that politics is, I think, you know, is different approaches.
I have a question. Why 9/11 occurred, and of course it was a terrible disaster, and, you know, for everyone, all Americans, and actually all of civilized society, right? I mean, it was just an awful thing. Why is it an issue of Republican or liberal versus conservative? Why have, apart from the fact that Bush is president, why have the conservative, why do you feel that the conservatives, or let's say that, you know, you've adopted this view vis-a-vis terror or this event as a conservative, where are the liberals on it? I mean, that's what I don't understand.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, that's what catapulted me over, because on one hand, I felt rather betrayed by the left and or liberals and those, because I had considered myself, and I still consider myself, again, back to labels, but a classic liberal. And I think that it is liberal to want to protect, you know, free Western democratic civilizations beyond just nation from one that is totalitarian and repressive and backward and infringes on human rights. And, you know, I'm talking about Islamism and terrorism, mm-hmm. but also, you know, in the Muslim world in a sort of general sense. I think that that is what something a true liberal should do. And I saw immediately after 9/11 was a lot of people around me who called themselves liberals and leftists. They were so intent on remaining in the anti-American camp, which I used to be in a little myself, too, that they, in a sense, I mean, not outrightly, but sort of cited or, you know, with the attitude, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And there have been a kind of, you know, opposing any sort of intervention, military or otherwise, in dealing with this totalitarian threat. And it seems to me that they're kind of on the wrong side of history at this point, and they're so... Some are so obsessed with Bush. You mentioned Bush's presidency. I mean, you know, there's plenty of criticism go around, even on the right, you know. But as Charles Krauthammer calls it, Bush derangement syndrome, I think, has rendered some people almost incapable of just coping with other anything other outside of that tunnel vision of Bush hatred. And that's another thing that sort of turned me off. And so I, you know, and I feel like, and the Democratic Party for me has not been offering anything. It's all been opposition and sort of tearing away.
Right.
And those, you know, those that do of the Democrats, like Lieberman, and you know, there's a few people in my view, I definitely support them. And it's not really a partisan obsession for me. It's who's, as I said, you know, kind of on the right side of history and who's engaging with the world, the post 9/11 world.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously Bush and the Republicans have the platform, and I'm just interested to know. I mean, I live around 10 miles north of the World Trade Center, maybe 15 miles, and I would say I'm more independent. I don't have a view either way. Of course, as the CEO of Block Talk Radio, I can't have a view yet, right? So I'm in the middle of all. I have all kinds. I have paleo-conservative racists on the show, and I have liberal Democrats who don't believe in racial profiling, okay? So I'm in the middle.
I like that about Blog Talk Radio as well, too.
Yeah, I mean, we can't take, you know, someday, you know, I hope, we'll see. But right now I like the fact that, you know, whoever wants to use this, fine, and as long as it's not too, you know, you're not killing anyone and it's not too, whatever. We have certain level, certain standards that we, in terms of responsibility, you know, to an audience. But
maybe no terrorist groups.
Right, no terrorist groups. I mean, I was listening to this guy. I saw that he called David Duke a scholar. I was reading one of his blog posts and I saw David Duke is a scholar. Okay, I think we've got... Yeah. But then I saw and then he was talking about destruction of Jews. He had a Jewish star with a cut down the middle, and it's kind of America's infatuation with Jews. And now that the neocons, which he referred to them as neocons, are in, you know, huge support of Jews in Israel Bill Bennett and the like. And this guy is just against any of that. He's, you know, so
yes, Jews run the world in America.
Yeah. Right, and this Jewish guy is giving him a platform to spew whatever he wants to, but that's okay for now. But what I'm saying is that I find it very interesting that there's this, that the liberals or the liberals concern. I don't even know how you use a term when these guys, you know, Osama, you know, does this and is, you've got this Islamic fundamentalism running rampant throughout the world, and I don't know how you decipher between political parties and so on. It seems to me a blur. I don't know if someone's weak. I mean, I can understand what the Democratic Party you think is weak because they just haven't really stood for anything, and they've done a terrible job in electioneering, and, you know, Kerry, and it was awful. That's what I don't kind of get. I don't understand it. You know, we're all trying to live in a secure society, and I think the Democratic leaders, I think, are also they just can't get organized. They just can't establish a platform that they can rally around. I don't know.
But then what I start to wonder is if you can't establish a platform. I mean, the platforms are at least hopefully based on actual beliefs and principles, or to some extent, right? You know, I know how politics is, but That's the idea. And, I mean, it's funny. They keep talking about, and they've been doing this for several years now, they're going to come up with a vision. You know, any day now, they're going to come up with their big vision. And if you don't, I mean, what does that say about a party or of any political group when you don't have that sort of belief system there? I mean, I do think there is one. You know, there are differences between the parties, and I have friends who are liberal Democrats, and we argue about things. So there is a belief system, but I mean, you know, if you can't come up with a platform, I guess the question I would say for them to ask themselves is what do you believe in? What are you putting forward here? And, you know, because Americans are very much, we want, you know, somebody, you know, people to be forward-thinking and put something out there. Not, I think the constant tearing away and complaining has not done well. And then I think, you know, in a time of war, it would be nice to have a party, you know, the loyal opposition, as it's been called. And, you know, even if the Democrats would come forward with constructive criticism about the war on terror, whatever you want to call it, you know, that would be helpful. And occasionally they do. There are those who do. But too often, to me, it just seems like political posturing and using these things, talking points for political advantage. And I just think the stakes are just too high right now, you know, to have the power be in hands like that, I mean, at least overwhelmingly. And yet at the same time, those of us, if we are voting Republican, we must constantly keep on the Republicans to be doing the same thing. You know?
Don't they constantly do that, though? I mean, in all elections, you know, when before Clinton was in, you know, the Democrats were a mess. Clinton comes in, establishes like a centrist Democrat view, which, you know, finally got rid of Jesse Jackson, and he was fiscally responsible, and he raised taxes. Okay, fine. One may argue whether it was good or not, but there was one of the largest expansions of markets and surpluses ever under that, you know, and under his leadership. Okay, but the Republicans were not in office, and of course they spent their days, you know, shooting him down. Republicans are office; the Democrats spend their days shooting them down. I mean, that's why there's no credibility or very little credibility in the political with politicians right now, I think, and nothing gets done.
That's a good point, and I know it's different. I can't really speak for that period and for Republicans because I wasn't really part of that. And it's funny, I wasn't even a Democrat. I was actually voted for Nader in 2000.
Okay.
But yeah, so I was sort of a liberal disillusioned with the Democrats myself at the time. So I can't really speak for that. I do think that, I mean, in retrospect, I think there were real concerns with Clinton. My own stem more from, you know, the lead up to 9/11 and to where we are now. But that goes, that precedes his presidency, you know, it's to be fair. You know, under Reagan, we, you know, pulled out after the bombing of the Marine barracks in Lebanon. You know, so there's been a series of events. But I do think the Clinton presidency was part of that. And that, to me, is what I hold them, you know, to what the grudge that I hold to the extent I do. But, you know, maybe it's true. You could say with the start of Clinton's first presidency up until now, you know, politics have become incredibly acrimonious. On the other hand, back to wartime, I mean, from what I've read, you know, during times of war, it's somewhat normal. You know, we often talk about how we want to be united and all that, but, you know, I would like a certain amount of that. But then it's also democracy. You know, that's
right. That's what I was going to say. I mean,
yeah.
You know, because you don't believe in a view or an approach or a strategy, does that mean that you're anti-American? I mean, you use that term, anti-American. It's quite interesting. And of course, just before we get on, I was reading this paleoconservatism thing from Wikipedia and his own blog entries, this guy, where he's talking about Barbara Boxer, Russ Feingold, of course, Jewish people who are anti-American, and but he also said John McCain's as vile as them, so he just doesn't like anybody. You know, but let's move on to one other issue.
Yeah.
So we've got this Islamic fundamentalism going on in throughout the world, right? And
right.
There's no moderate Islamic idea. Moderate Islamic ideals are just suppressed, and if there are any moderate Islamic leaders, they're just, or clerics, they're either suppressed, killed, set aside, or they're certainly not saying anything. So what is, have you written about, or have you thought about, you know, what's the answer here? I mean, how does a civilized society deal with this? And of course, it's a huge issue, which really can't be dealt with in this platform, but I just thought I would pose that to you.
You know, I mean, it's a somewhat open-ended question, even for myself. I do have to say, I mean, that there are moderates out there. I'm not actually one of those people. You know, I do acknowledge those figures, and I've even written some articles trying to account for all the different voices. You do, though, see a theme where many of them either are secular or converted to Christianity. Many of the more well-known moderates originally from the Muslim world. So, you know, that's something. But they're out there. But like you said, they're very much under threat, and there's just maybe not enough of them. And you know, and I do think in terms of how we approach it, I you know, it's back to kind of a World War II to some extent for me. That's what I keep thinking about. But, you know, at the time, we didn't really have the luxury of asking how many Germans were Nazis or how many Japanese supported the imperial military regime, you know. And I don't know if we have the luxury now. I do think, you know, one of the difficulties, too, is that we're trying to fight sort of a PC war. And, it doesn't allow us to sort of define it accurately, to name the enemy in some respects. And I know it's a broad brush, but that's sort of, I don't know quite how you avoid that. And this sort of fear of giving offense, I think, is very much crippling the West in general. And that's one of the things I've been writing about lately, that, you know, there's more than one way to sort of take down a civilization, and it's not all military. And I think the sort of collision of Western suicidalism, sort of. When I said anti-Americanism, jumping over there for a minute, I meant a real philosophy. I wasn't just using the term flippantly. I meant those that genuinely feel that America is the bad guy in the world, that we are a force for bad, and we're the most dangerous player in the world. It's usually America and Israel, but, you know, big Satan, little Satan. I mean, I think actually some of the propaganda from the Muslim world has kind of been drummed into the folks' heads, and I've seen that here locally. In any case, you know, so that's something that is going to be difficult for us as a civilization to overcome. You know, I don't exactly have the answers, but I definitely think the way we're trying to fight the war here, you know, and if you look at Iraq, for instance, and back to World War II, we were only able to defeat the Nazis and the Japanese by complete and utter, you know, completely defeating them militarily, you know, just defeating their will to continue to go on and fight. And you can only do that through complete, you know, military victory. Then we were able to, through a real occupation, to actually, you know, help these societies get past those sort of backwards philosophies. Political philosophies, and now, you know, they're allies of ours. So that, in a way, does, you know, it's sort of encouraging, especially with the Japanese.
Right. It's a different enemy, though, right? Because, you know, there's a 1.3 billion Muslims. Of course, most are not radical, but you've got radical fundamentalism in so many countries throughout Western Europe, which they're concerned, the leaders there, of course, not to mention the leaders of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the rest, that are sitting on these, you know, these governments that are ready to crumble at any uprising which could occur. It's certainly a challenge.
It's a tenuous situation, I know. And then the other problem.
And they don't care about life. I mean, again, when you deal with an organization of people that just will kill their young, it's irrational.
Well, this is true. But they do respect strength and very much despise weakness. And they've said as much in terms of our interactions. I mean, I know, and I do think that that's something to keep in mind. And I think in some ways we're fighting sort of a you know, somewhat primitive, you know, warrior kind of mentality. There's, you know, which goes way back. And to try to fight those with that mentality with a sort of Marquess of Queensberry rules, I don't know that that works.
I personally find it just fascinating that these few have hijacked a religion that's, you know, has been around for quite a long time, and I think that ultimately the way it gets resolved is that the people, the mass, the majority, say, hey, it's enough already. You know, we are a peaceful people, and we cannot allow this to happen. I mean, if in any other religion, look, you have, you know, the KKK on the far right Christian, or, you know, anti-defamation, or the aggressive far right Jewish organizations. No one would allow to speak on behalf of the mass organizations. It just doesn't exist. But here, that to me is the biggest, the most interesting thing here.
Yeah. Well, then you do have to wonder if they have the backbone to do that, or, you know, or what kind of sympathies are out there. I mean, I think ultimately what has to happen to overcome this, you know, this phase is that, you know, Islam has to undergo something like a reformation. I mean, that's what happened with Christianity and in a sense, you know, over time with Judaism, and it has to happen. That's the only thing. You know, that can be a very long process, as we've seen, and religions may or may not have it in them to get to that point, but that's ultimately what needs to happen, and that's a change that has to come from within. But again, I don't know that we have the sort of luxury of waiting for this, and we do have our own survival to think about when we're talking about people using, you know, using potentially some kind of weapons of mass destruction, or just what kind of level of terrorism do we want to, are people willing to put up with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't happened here yet, a sort of Israel before the barrier style, and still the attempts are there. Level of terrorism has not happened here yet, but you know people will, if that did happen, people have to decide what they can accept, and in some of it's just self-preservation. It's just the instinct. We can't just roll over. I mean, we have, you know, people to protect and a civilization to keep going. It's important.
Right. I fully agree.
That's where, you know, that's where it's sort of like we don't have a choice. We have to figure out something.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree. And I think that this is a perfect platform for you, Cinnamon, to kind of talk about these issues and the issues that are important to you, and have your guests on and kind of chat it up, and I think you'd love it.
Well, thank you. I'm really thinking about it. I mean, it's sort of a challenge that I need to rise to the occasion here. But you know, you can see I'm quite a talker, and don't have a problem there. And you know, and I do. I would love to put forward some of my own. I'd love to focus on, you know, some of the guests, and there's some local artists and people around here who never really get much attention because their politics are a little. They're political misfits, as I said. So I would love to interview people like that and just kind of give a voice to that. And it is good to just talk out your ideas. I'm so used to sitting there at the computer, and you kind of live inside your own head. So it's really good to actually interact with people.
No, I think that's true. And I think that's what's really good about it. And what you describe about the local, the empowerment of first of all, everyone has an opportunity to do this, but you could reach out to a lot of people locally and you know, have them express themselves in the ways they want and use it for whatever platform.
Yeah, I know. The possibilities are endless.
It's funny. My daughter was doing a book report on Carolyn Cooney. The Face on the Milk Carton was the book. So my daughter said, Dad, I got to come up with something. Could you think of anything? I've got to interview, I'm the author, and I've got to interview the lead character, who's a 15-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
Said, well, why don't you set up a show on Blog Talk Radio? And we'll create a host channel for you, and then you can, and my wife played the character. My daughter wrote both sides of the script. It was 3 minutes. So we set up a show on Blog Talk Radio, Carolyn Cooney, Face on the Milk Carton, and she conducted an interview with the character from the book and played it for her class because they had access to the computer, and then went to Blog Talk Radio, and it was perfect.
Oh, great. Did she do it? And she did it?
She did it.
You guys did it? Well, that's so great.
You know what I'm just saying? It's just empowering. So,
yeah.
You know, the ability to do that, just pick up a phone and say, fine, you know, why not? So, And I think that's cool. So, you know, look, if local town, local people there, you know, want to get involved. Now, you write for the, you're with San Francisco on what do you
Chronicle.
Write for the online version of the newspaper?
It's the online version. It's sort of somewhat separate but connected of the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's called sfgate.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that blog, and then I also have a website, cinnamonstillwell.com, just for general.
And what's Family Security Matters?
Family Security Matters. They're, I'm also a columnist for them. Just started a couple months ago. And, well, they're sort of started out, the site, they're a nonprofit organization sort of dedicated to providing information for regular Americans just about terrorism and how to, you know, how to prepare and your family and your home and emergency kits and all that kind of stuff. And they're also a political site that presents a variety of viewpoints with their contributing editors. And, I just started writing for them a couple months ago, and it's been really great. The editor there, Carol Tabor, is just very supportive, and they do get me on the radio a little bit. I've gotten a few the old radio.
The old radio. And, we still accept that.
Yeah. Well, you got to do it now and then. But I do. That is the appeal, you know, with Blog Talk Radio too. You don't have to wait for somebody to invite you on. You could just do your own thing.
Exactly. Well, we in fact have been getting calls from a lot of radio show hosts. In fact, Cynthia Bryan, who is supposedly calling in this evening. She has a radio show on, actually she's on World Talk Radio, and it's syndicated to a number of other places, and she's now just working with us at Blog Talk Radio, not doing live shows yet, but she's doing shows and using our program guides, so we're listing her shows and our archive shows so people can reach them.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So, they're getting hip to it.
Yes, but we're getting a lot of people that actually have radio doing terrestrial radio who want to either syndicate their shows to us or either add another live aspect to their show that's on Blog Talk Radio, which has universal streaming where everybody can hear what's going on.
Right. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, it is definitely the cutting edge, you know, like the blogosphere, like internet journalism in general, which, you know, I'm proud to be part of. And I've made it into print a couple of times, but I'm generally online. But it's just, you know, it's where it's at. It's the future.
Yeah.
You know?
And one of the other things that you had written about was this, I was reading through your blog posts, was this 9/11 worker issue with the health.
Yeah. It's
terrible thing. It's awful, awful thing.
There. Well, I was in New York City last month and had a really nice little trip. It's my favorite city, even more than San Francisco, actually. Every time I get back, I want to move there, but it hasn't worked out yet. I sort of have a niche here, so I'm stuck, but I love to visit. And I went to Ground Zero while I was there. I still call it that. I guess it's a habit. And I had kind of a disturbing experience. I hadn't been in a while, and it was the day before the fifth anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. I couldn't go that day because I was at a conference, but it was just a real zoo, and all the 9/11 conspiracy people were out there who I've taken on a couple of times. And, you know, and I guess what I found, you know, disturbing, the most disturbing, was the behavior of tourists from all over the world, I should mention, not, you know, Americans, all kinds of people, who were just sort of gawking and treating it as a place to go take pictures. There were people smiling for photos in front of the gaping hole that remains in the ground, and it was just macabre and very strange. And I said this, and so I wrote a column about it, and I got this very, it was kind of an emotional column because the experience was, and I just sort of wanted to get out of there, you know, pretty soon, and I didn't feel like I really wanted to go back while it's in its present state, because there's no sort of proper forum to grieve or to pay respects to, you know, the level that is deserved for what happened there, I feel like. I'm not sure that the memorial that they have in mind, should it ever come to pass, is going to be that place, but something. We need to build something there, I think. And so then I heard from all these people. I got all these emails from, you know, people who had lost family members and on 9/11 and people who were involved in various organizations. And one of them was, I think they're called World Trade Center Families for Proper Burial, and that are trying to get the city to go through you know, even more to go through the material, you know, the what was left over there at Fresh Kills landfill. And then there are those, an organization trying to help the, I believe it's called Unsung Heroes, trying to help the people who went to volunteer to clean up and recover bodies and such, and who are experiencing health problems now, you know, and they need our help. And I do think that those people deserve the nation's thanks in whatever way we can.
Yeah, there's no question. If I can, let me just give the phone number. My show on Blog Talk Radio, it's 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. You know, it's interesting that we just had a 9/11 tribute show on Blog Talk Radio on September 11th. It was 2.5 hours. We collected material from 4 or 5 of the largest websites that aggregated this information. One was the 2996 Project, where 3,000 bloggers each took a person who died in the World Trade Center the Pentagon and in air, and wrote about them, did a background on them. And it was quite a fascinating thing, and we had the Los Angeles Fire Department call in. They were also hosts on Blog Talk Radio, the Los Angeles Fire Department, and they read some tributes and so on. And we talked a little about where we were, and as I said, I lived about 10 to 14 miles north of Trade Center, and a lot of friends of mine work down there. And that afternoon, it was around noon by the time this whole thing had occurred. You know, it occurred, and then a couple hours later, and some of the folks were coming home from work. The kids had come home from school, were let out of school early. Of course, we didn't know where the next attack would be. Of course,
right.
Where I live in the suburbs, we didn't think so, but of course you never know at that time.
No.
From where we live, we could see the buildings smoldering still in New Jersey. But the fathers that came home had walked or made their way all the way over from Jersey, at least to by the George Washington Bridge, and then got rides, were picked up by their wives or made other arrangements, had seen people jumping from windows, and just it was the most surreal thing. And it was just such an incredible moment, of course, for everybody, and wherever you were in San Francisco, perhaps, or whatnot. But fire stations and fire companies in New Jersey and in Long Island, and even as far away as Los Angeles, went to that site to help, that massive cleanup effort. And to hear that these people are coming down with lymphomas and other types of respiratory cancers or other blood type disorders, which clearly there's not even a question whether or not it came from that event. It's just
right.
Awful. And they don't have health insurance in some instances. I was reading on your blog.
Yeah, well, I did a follow-up piece that turned out to be almost like a second article at my blog called Ground Zero Revisited, which was in response to all those emails I got from people. And I wanted to, you know, just help sort of publicize the various causes and groups they told me about and put links there. And that was one of them. Let's see, the Unsung Heroes Helping Heroes is a website that is sort of dedicated to raising funds for that purpose. And, you know, there was a lot of aspects about it that I didn't know, that I hadn't really followed that closely. And that was one of them. I mean, I'm ashamed to say. And then there were some things that I found somewhat heartening, which was just that, you know, the place itself seemed so, the behavior and the setting seemed so sort of inappropriate to me. But it turns out that there are some museums out there that are a little better. Well, for one thing, there's apparently a secure sort of family room at the Liberty Building across the street that is quiet and secured.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I didn't know about this either. This is a guy who wrote to me. He had lost his sister on Flight 11. And so there's a building across the street, and I was just a room there for families, and I was just relieved to hear that because I couldn't imagine, you know, I was upset down there by the environment, and I didn't even, you know anybody personally. I didn't. But and then there's a tribute World Trade Center Visitor Center that's across the street. There's a ground, and this one sounded really good. You should go check it out because it's all in New York, Ground Zero Museum Workshop, which has got photographs and artifacts, you know, from the...
It's hard for me to, living here and living through it, again, I was in New Jersey that morning, but seeing so close to us here and really understanding, you know, just living through this. I mean, in the days after, the local news and newspapers and everything were postings of people looking for their brothers and sisters and fathers, and just the mass devastation. You knew that no one was going to live out from that. It's hard to come to grips with it, I have to say.
I know. Well, maybe we never do come to grips with things like that. I mean, I say we. For you, I know it's very different. I, you know, had a lot of people assume that if you were, you know, it's definitely, I don't even compare it to what you and people who actually lived there and witnessed things, you know, went through. But I can simply say that there are those of us who were all the way across the country who felt as connected as you could feel.
No question.
No question. Yeah, and of course the whole nation, you know, we were all worried. We didn't know what was going to happen next, like you said, but it just, you know, hit me very hard, and I remember going through sort of a period of physical mourning, in a way, for several months afterwards, and I don't know if you remember this. A lot of people said it at the time, but, you know, I couldn't enjoy humor, and I couldn't enjoy music, and a lot of
Well, you feel violated, you know.
Yeah, it was a horrible thing, you know, that was done. It was a real, I call it, you know, just a crime against humanity, and the war came to our soil and to our cities and our people, and, you know, it was very painful. So I don't know if maybe you don't come ever to grips. Maybe you shouldn't, you know. I don't really believe in, you know, you can just go see the therapist and then it's all over.
Well, it was interesting because when my kids came home that morning, and, you know, our classes were let out at noon, like many, many classrooms throughout the country, I think that day were let out. You know, what do you... I have a 9 and a 13-year-old girl now. So 5 years earlier, I had 4 and 9. You know, what do you explain? You know, what happened here? The images on the TV were just unbelievable. I mean, the planes going in and, you know, dads coming home from work literally with their suit jackets with powder on them and pulled me aside and said, Alan, you cannot even imagine seeing people jumping out of the World Trade Center. I mean, you just can't even imagine that. So
yeah,
it's just unbelievable. So, again, those types of things, we just kind of soar away. And kids are just amazingly resilient. But what I was getting really back to was that these are terrific opportunities, these museums, and they should be there. And I think for people that aren't as informed and weren't close to it, like many of us were here, it's a great opportunity to get more informed.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I think. Like anything, like the Holocaust. You know, I know I saw you referenced Auschwitz, and people were taking pictures over there, and I read through that.
They do the same thing. I mean, I've seen people do this all over the world, you know, places. I mean, not quite the same situation, but places where you know, ancient ruins and things like that, and the girls doing the little poses, little cheesecake poses, and smiling for their boyfriends in front of things. I put that in as a sort of hypothetical. You know, it's in the first article, it's as if people were in Auschwitz, you know, cute photos in front of the gas chambers. But a lot of people wrote to me, never visited, and said that it actually was that way. I don't quite know how to explain it. I think that, you know, in some ways we may have lost the ability to know how to act appropriately sometimes in these very solemn situations. Getting back to what you were saying, I heard from New Yorkers, and the majority of them described, you know, kind of not going down there that much and kind of don't go to those museums and stuff because, you know, they lived through it, like you said.
Yeah.
I think for me it was a way of trying to connect, you know, and with the city, too, that I grew up in. You know, and it turned out to be not quite looking for, but I'm still glad I went and was able to call attention to some of these issues.
Right. No, I understand. And it's look, I had many of a business meeting in the World Trade, Windows of the World up top. I was in the telecom business before I got into this business, and we had breakfast meetings up there. So, you know, I can't, you know, 10, 12 times up there, 8:30 in the morning, Tuesday mornings, very popular times. But it's good, you know. So you kind of select different stories, and not just to California. You do deal with issues there also, I think, right? I mean,
I do, yeah. You know, I'm all over the place, I think. I get bored very quickly, and so I like to write about all different things and just jump around. So I do cover some San Francisco stuff because there is an endless source of material in San Francisco politics, that's for sure. And, you know, I do that, but I just write about whatever strikes my fancy, basically, and that my editor agrees to.
How often do you write an article for the online version?
Well, I do. It's just twice a month right now. I'd love to do it weekly, but not yet. It's twice a month, and then I do two a month for Family Security Matters, and those are pretty much all sort of national security. I call them my war columns, you know, related, because that's the theme of the site. But you know, I've written about local. I've written about the Middle East, and you know, I haven't done as much lately. I get it in there, but I used to write for Israel National News and Jewish Press, and I do occasionally write for a local Jewish, very liberal Jewish paper. And I'm sort of the resident right wing nut they call up, and it's J Weekly, the Weekly of Northern California. And so you know, I'm you know, definitely all over the place, and African American issues and illegal immigration.
So you should have a full plate and content for your new show on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is true.
Which we hope to see. I think our time's coming to an end, and we went a little longer, which was good because I enjoyed this conversation with you.
Me too.
Yeah, it was very good. You could find Cinnamon at cinnamonstillwell.blogspot.com, and you've got your other links there. And it was really terrific having you. And you know, I think it's good that you're raising the our attention to so many of these matters. And you know, look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, me too. And I thank you so much for having me on. And you know, maybe I'll be back doing my own thing.
Well, I'll call your show next. How's that?
Okay, that sounds great.
Okay,
I've got my first guest lined up.
That's right. I'll be right there. Thanks, Cinnamon.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
All right, have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
That was Cinnamon Stillwell, and fascinating lady involved in so many different things, and it was a pleasure to have her on. I'm just going to cover a few more things tonight. I guess Cynthia was unable to make it, which we'll learn a bit more perhaps tomorrow. She'll let me know. I know she's got a lot of stuff going on. She's the busiest person, one of the busiest people I've ever come across. I don't know her well. I can just say that I was looking at her bio, and it says, meet the founding director, Cynthia Bryan. Cynthia Bryan, a woman, wife, mother, actor, model, teacher, interior designer, gardener, artist, casting director, writer, published author, producer, world traveler, furniture designer, television and radio host. This lady is the Renaissance woman of the new millennium. Now, when I saw that today on page 2 of 6 of her blog, I said, what am I going to possibly ask her about? I mean, she describes herself with 13 or 14 terms. I guess one's objective in life is to describe yourself with 13 or 14 terms. One can certainly argue that she's a very busy woman, and perhaps she was on one of these other endeavors this evening and was unable to make it, but that's fine. We'll try to get her back. That's Cynthia Bryan. Once again, this is Alan Levy. You're on the you've listened to the Alan Levy Show. I appreciate that. We have a show Tuesday night, which will be a very, very spicy show. Pony Boy, who's one of our top new hosts on Blog Talk Radio, will be my guest, and I trust it'll be far more light than tonight, which tonight was quite interesting and informative, and I love these discussions. But Pony Boy, as you will see, is quite famous for her vlogs and her many other antics. She's a riot, a lot of fun, and she'll be my guest Tuesday night. Once again, it's Alan Levy, and thanks for joining me this evening. Bye-bye.